Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, what price would you pay to stay sharp as you age? Would you make a deal with the devil to avoid dementia? That's a question faced by the title character in Walter Mosley's new novel, The Last Days of Ptolemy Gray. Gray is a 91-year-old African-American man living on his own in South Central L.A. who loses his grandnephew, caretaker, to a drive-by shooting, but finds new life as he makes that deal with the devil to gain the mental clarity to take care of some unfinished business before his death. Walter Mosley joins me now, the author of some 38 books across many genres. He's probably best known for the E.Z. Rollins mysteries, but he's also a contributor to The Nation magazine and the recipient of Penn USA's Lifetime Achievement Award. Walter Mosley, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here.
I have to start with the character's name. I've been saying it with a P because I know a little bit about the book. Ptolemy, but P-T-O-L-E-M-Y, often said Ptolemy.
Yeah, yeah, or Ptolemy. Yeah, it's like, you know, I just, you know, I call him Ptolemy, you know, and but you know, people call him many things. As the book reveals, you know, they call him Pity, they call him Pity Papa, they call him all kinds of names. But, you know, it's a name, you know, kind of, you know, those families trying to reach back to Africa in one way or another and coming up with this Greek name.
Name yeah. from Egyptian kings, Cleopatra's father.
Yeah, well, name from Egyptian kings, but who were named by the Greeks. So these are actually Greek names that kind of took on the Egyptian pallor.
And usually pronounced starting with the T sound, but all the nicknames that you have for the character are Pity and things
yes,
with the P.
Yes, exactly.
Let's have you read. Since you came in, I know, prepared to read something from the book, so why don't we do it right at the top.
I'm going to read the first two pages. It's pretty short. "Hello?" the very, very old black man said into the receiver. The phone had not rung for more than a week and a half by his reckoning, but really it had only been a little more than 3 days. Somebody had called, a woman. She seemed sad. He remembered that she'd called more than once. Classical piano played softly from a radio in the background. A console television prattled away, set on a 24-hour news station. "Is somebody there?" the old man asked before the caller could speak. "Papa Gray?" a male voice said. It was a young man's voice, free from the strain and gravel of age. "Is that you, Reggie? Where you been, boy? I've been waiting for you to come for a week. No, 2 weeks. I don't know exactly, but it's been a long time." "No, Papa Gray. No, it's me, Hilly." "Who? Where's Reggie?" Hilly went silent for 2 seconds, and the old man said, "Is anybody there?" "I'm here, Papa Gray," the voice assured. "I'm here." He was certainly there on the other end of the line, but who was it, the old man wondered. He looked around the room for a clue to his caller's identity, but all he saw were piles of newspapers, boxes of every size and shape and furniture. There were at least a dozen chairs and a big bureau that was tilted over on a broken leg, 2 dining tables that were flush up against the south and east walls. His tattered mattress under its thin army blanket lay beneath the southern table. That was Etude number 2 in A-flat major by Chopin, the radio announcer said. "Now we're going to hear from Papa Gray," a voice said. "Half a dozen bombs went off in and around Baghdad today. 64 people were killed." Was a voice coming from the radio or the TV? No, it was in his ear. The telephone. "Who is this?" Ptolemy Gray asked, remembering that he was having a phone conversation. "It's Hilly, Papa, your great-nephew, June's daughter's son." "Who?" "Hilly," the young man said, raising his voice slightly. "Your nephew." "Where's Reggie?" Ptolemy asked. "Where's my son?" "He can't come today, Uncle," Hilly said. "Mama asked me to call you and see if you needed anything."
All right. Walter Mosley reading live from his new novel, The Last Days of Ptolemy Gray. So things are foggy for him as the story begins, but he's not in full-blown dementia.
No, he's just like, he's at the door. He's at the door of dementia. You know, it's like a double door, first dementia, then death. And he's just about there. He can't really take care of himself, but he can live alone.
And so he's offered an experimental drug by a doctor he calls the devil that offers him the chance to wrap up his affairs in exchange for a much shortened life. Does that make the book science fiction?
Well, you know, that's an interesting notion. The way I look at it is like this. One of the big issues about how the brain works is electricity and what the electrical connections are. I say that this doctor is working with a group of rogue doctors doing illegal research in Mumbai, I imagine, who've come up with a medicine that can affect the electrical connections of the body, but it's not just in the brain, through the whole body. So, I've talked to enough people to know that this is within the realm of possibility. So, is it science fiction? I don't know. You know, it's much more so I would call it magical realism.
Why Mumbai?
Well, you go to places where you feel you can get away with things. You know, sometimes distance helps you get away with it. Sometimes the place itself has different notions, ideas, rules.
And you said that the story was in some ways inspired by your mother's last years when she was fighting dementia. You think she would have taken the deal? Would you take the deal?
Oh, absolutely. And I think my mother would have too, yes. Yeah. I mean, because it's a deal. The one thing is, You lose all power. You're completely enfeebled, and you know that there's something that you can know, that you can do, and so there's no other choice.
More clarity for a shorter life. In other words, you miss the time of your end of life when you're really in dementia.
Yeah, when you wouldn't be there anyway. So the idea for Ptolemy is, hey, I can, and he has to, and also he has things he has to do. He knows there are things that he has to do, and he can't do them the way that his mind is working right now.
Now, as we heard in the reading, the book opens with him living in squalor. The description of his apartment is pretty scary, and the fact that Ptolemy Gray is 91 means he's a survivor of Jim Crow. His family moved from sharecropping in the South to L.A. Is it too much to see a link between the mess that he's got stashed in the house and the ugliness of some of his history or that history?
Well, I think that there's a connection. But, the thing that I really love about Ptolemy and his life is that he connects with everybody. And you see it all through the books. There are all kinds of people. He has friends who are Jewish, friends who are Palestinian, friends who are Chinese. He's dealt with all kinds of people, and all of them can identify with where he's going through, what he's going through,
and
trying to hold on to.
And he may look like a poor old man, but he has his secrets and his treasures.
Yes, he has more than one treasure. Yeah, what value is it for him? I think that another thing that I like about the character is that he's not nowhere near a perfect person, and it's hard for him to take advantage of what he has, and it's taken him to face death in reality, to be able to say, well, now I have the courage to do something because there's nothing else for me to do.
And he has a responsibility that he sees to the young that leads him to make this Faustian bargain. Do you think surviving that time as an African-American is an important legacy in its own right, one that's being lost?
Well, it's interesting. I think it's important that, anybody who's writing about their history, you want to write a little bit about your people and what they did. So, if you're a Croatian or if you're Mongolian or if you're Vietnamese, this man happens to be an African-American, and it's important in that way. The story itself is important, I think, but I think that it's important that he has a history and that and this is a, this is a much more, Catholic with a small C novel where I'm trying to reach a large group of people who would understand where he's standing. So, yes, it is important, his history, but history is always important.
My guest, Walter Mosley, author of his latest novel now, The Last Days of Ptolemy Gray. The news is playing 24/7 in the background of Ptolemy's Fog. Is that a critique of the news media, or why the all-news station?
Well, he has an all-news station and then an NPR-like, the station where it's like, mostly classical but some jazz and some polka and that kind of stuff, folk. I think both of those things he uses to fill up his time so he doesn't feel alone, he doesn't feel empty. But on top of that is the stories coming out of the news actually make a comment on the world. And at one point or another, when he's in kind of one of his hallucinatory states, he actually has a conversation with the woman on television saying, why are you telling me these things? What do these things mean? Who's the enemy? Who am I fighting? I don't understand. Is it the German? Because I know what it is to fight the German. And she says, well, we don't really know who the enemy is, but we figure if we point a gun at them and they shoot back, then they're the enemy. So So I am making some political comments inside of it. But on the other hand, you know, anybody who's dealt with people who have this disease, they often turn on that television, and they don't turn it off because they don't know how to turn it back on again. So it plays all the time. Otherwise, they'll be alone.
The last time you were on the show was in 2006, and you had called at that time for a new black-oriented political party. Since then, we've got an African-American president through the Democratic Party, and there are now, as of the midterms, two black Republican members of the House.
Mm-hmm.
Do you still think a separate party would be a good idea?
What I've done is I've actually changed that. I want to create a movement called the Democracy Initiative. The Democracy Initiative, very, very shortly to explain, every person in America will be on this website. And the website, you'll say your 10 most interesting – the things that you're interested in politically in order. And then connect with each other through that. So you might be a white Aryan separatist or a black nationalist, but way up on your list is medical care for children. Mm-hmm. So the white Aryan separatist and the black nationalist can work together because one of the most important things to them is to make sure that their children get medical care. So one of the problems that we have in democracy today is that we start off with how we're different. I want to put that on its head and say, let's start off where we're the same and see how we can work together and not have to deal with these, you know, these false differences that many of the people who run politics today govern us with.
You've got a new mystery series set in New York City featuring the character Leonard McGill. And for this book, you return to the L.A. of E.Z. Rawlins. Do you get that? Do you go to the different cities for different stories? You know, does New York have the same great migration legacy that Los Angeles does, or are they different?
Well, New York is like the migratory city, right? Everybody migrates
from
New
everywhere.
York. Yeah, you know, that's interesting. E.Z. Rawlins is an homage to my father and his generation. Those people who moved to L.A., who actually changed the world in many ways but didn't make it into the history books. I did those books to talk about that. That's very much a 20th century series. Leonard McGill lives in the present, whereas in Easy's world, he knew who he was in every room he walked in. The world was codified, was defined, black and white. In Leonard McGill's world, 21st century New York, there is no codification. Every door he walks into is a different response. Everything he does is different. And so this is much more my world, Leonard's world. He has pretty much the same issues, but the way he deals with them and the way he comes to them is very much different.
The president just visited Indonesia, where he lived for a while as a child. You also come from a mixed race, multifaceted heritage. And I guess that relates to what you were just saying. Are you encouraged by the way the president has been received here and around the world, politics of healthcare aside?
It's interesting. I did a fundraiser for Obama about 3 months before the election. And when I got in front of the group, I said, look, he's going to get elected. You don't have to worry about that. He's going to get elected. The problem is once we elect him, are we going to keep on working at the same level to try to make his policies work and correct him where we think his policies are wrong? We, the electorate, have not done that. Obama, therefore, is on his own. He makes decisions on his own, some of which are good, some of which are bad. And we allow other people like the Teabag Party and all these other people to start to make political movements where we're saying, well, what's he doing? What's he doing? Well, the question is always, what are we doing? Am I happy? No. But am I unhappy with him? Not particularly. I'm unhappy with us for not being, you know, really being a part of the democracy and working every day, you know, like an hour every day in trying to make a difference.
One of the bloggers on our politics website, it's freecountry.org, Jamie Floyd, was on recently saying, Obama didn't betray his base.
Mm-hmm.
His base betrayed him,
exactly.
Deserted him. It sounds like you're saying the same thing.
Half of that is true. The other half is that he I think that, you know, becoming president, he kind of meandered off into, well, I'm the president. I'm making the decisions. I have to be responsible. I'm not exactly sure why. You know, I'm not president, so I don't know what that means. I think that he needs to organize us some, too. You know, he needs to pay attention and has to listen to, you know, to criticism. Yeah, you know, like for me, like, you know, the place where I come at odds with everybody is the bailouts, you know. I say, the guy robbed me, and now I'm bailing him out. I don't get that. You know, I'd much rather give it to the rank and file. Any taxpayer under $40,000 a year, give him that money and let or her that money. Let them spend it.
How's your hope level? One of my producers remembers seeing you in an interview, might have been right after the election, where you thought the U.S. had turned its back on some of the misdeeds of the past. How's your – we have 15 seconds. How's your hope level?
You know, I'm always very hopeful. I'm always very hopeful, and I think there's a lot of potential in America. But we're still 80% asleep. And the question is, are we going to wake up or not?
Walter Mosley, his new book is The Last Days of Ptolemy Gray. And so great to have you on the program again. Thank you.
Great to be here. Thanks.